We have been working and rehearsing on the B minor since January. We meet once a week for 2.5 hours, and I've expanded this particular group to 75 singers. It'll be in Chenery, and we'll be able to have a larger orchestra if we need to than we can in Stetson. And of course, Chenery holds a lot more people than Stetson does, so we're hoping we can have a crowd to show up for the B minor. But in the middle of preparing this, it's of course hard not to think about the past and all the things that we've done together as an organization. And I'm extremely proud of this group of singers, and am most grateful for their loyalty over the years. And it's because of the loyalty and dedication of the singers that we were able to tackle such significant choral works like the B minor Mass. So I'm indebted to all the singers who are willing to work really hard on Tuesday nights after a full day's work and taking care of their own families. And over the years, I would say that's what I've been most moved by, this loyalty by so many people who are interested in singing great choral music.
So let's look at some of the reasons why you chose the B minor Mass of Johann Sebastian Bach, some obvious reasons.
Well, you know, of the major choral works of Bach, including the Passions and the Cantatas, it's the B minor that the chorus has such a prominent role in the singing of that Mass. We have all the soloists lined up, and they're all fantastic people coming in. But this particular work by Bach, of all the major works, I would say the chorus really is the driving force. And so in my final work that I would conduct with the singers, I thought it was great to be able to sing this particular work, besides the fact that many people consider it to be one of the greatest choral works of all times. But it certainly features the choir in a significant way.
When was the last time you conducted the B minor Mass?
I think it was 8 years ago. One of the traditions that I tried to continue that was started by Dr. Overly 70 years ago, as a matter of fact, as we were celebrating not only my retirement, but the 70th anniversary of the founding of the Bach Festival. And Russ Hammer continued this tradition in trying to expose the students and community of the major works of Bach. He had a formula of where he repeated every 4 years a major work of Bach. So that formula was predictable. That's not been so easily sustainable for all kinds of reasons. But it was to give the K College students the opportunity to sing the major works of Bach. And by repeating a major work every 4 years, then, of course, a graduating class got to experience some of the major works of Bach. So I've tried to do that. So this is our third time with the B minor. And each time it seems to become more difficult to pull off. I think it's because the first time I don't think I knew what it was I really didn't know sometimes, especially how difficult the work is to sing. And now that I have a better understanding of the challenges of the work, some days I'm thinking, no, exactly why did I choose this work again? Because it's certainly I would say, is of all the works I've ever tried to prepare ever, it's the most challenging.
Does the act of relearning and re-preparing the B minor Mass cause you to find new things in the score every time?
I think, as you know, performing any work by Bach, I think the more one studies those scores and then tries to perform the works of Bach, it's inevitable that one more new thing is going to be learned. And it could be anything from the structure of the piece, exactly how this is put together, to the extraordinarily demanding vocal challenges of the work, mm-hmm. and trying to figure that out and trying to help singers navigate through very long melismatic sections on the dreaded vowel eh, as in the Kyrie, and trying to get through those long fugues on one vowel, and eh being a very difficult vowel for singers to sing compared to, say, the vowel E.
It's tougher in Michigan, I think.
I think you're right.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is why the same text used in a mass can produce works that are of such different lengths. You'll see some composers write a mass that takes about an hour and others that take twice as long.
That's a very good question. Sometimes it depends on the tempo that the conductor chooses on some of the really slower movements like Crucifixus, a recording we've been studying that I love by Robert Shaw that was recorded in 1960 on that particular movement compared to, say, the tempo of John Elliott Gardner is significantly slower. And so the total length of the B minor with the Robert Shaw recording is 10 to 12 minutes slower. Takes more time, 10 to 12 minutes longer to complete the mass than, say, some of the other conductors that I've been studying, like John Elliott Gardner. So that's one of the reasons. It's just the tempo itself. And then the tradition in setting of the Kyrie, eleison, that's the entire text of that. But that first fugue, the way it's developed by Bach, takes about 6.5 to 7 minutes, depending on the tempo.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the treatment of that text.
Another composer wouldn't go as far.
Because he does that because he can. I mean, because of his genius, I think, in developing fugal themes and just understanding counterpoint. And it's never boring. It's always interesting. But I think it takes, for me, I would say the brains of a Bach or a Mozart to extend some of those texts as long as they do. And it works, but my goodness, it's a real vocal challenge.
I'm reminded of something that composer C. Curtis Smith said to me once. He listened to WMUK, and he criticized, let slip, that, you know, Kara, you might be playing a lot of obscure composers, and that's interesting to play the music of the contemporaries of Bach or Mozart, but you really should play Bach as often as you can. There is no getting around the genius that he was.
I'm reading some, I'm looking at some actually notes that Betsy Start did for us during one of those previous performances of the B minor. And one of her statements that I think the whole world agrees with is Bach, who has arguably had more influence on more composers than any other single figure in history. Bach's music was not performed much immediately after his death, but it was known and respected by other composers. Haydn owned a copy of the B minor Mass, and Mozart studied the Art of the Fugue. So I think the legacy of Bach and the influence of his music on composers as we speak is profound.
Sure, it's important for people who are writing music. And I think Dr. Overly would agree with me that it's important for just regular people to hear as well.
I'm going to read another statement. This is from a lecture that I found online by Tim Smith. He delivered this lecture at Ball State University in conjunction with a performance of the B minor in 1995. And I think what he says is perhaps addresses what you just addressed. Yet, through his musical voice, he expresses thoughts and emotions on a scale that very nearly speaks for all mankind. In his music, he can express simple sadness or profound pathos. But more often we hear a great joy, humor, and zest for life. We also hear the heartbeat of one possessed of a profound reverence and devotion. In his Mass in B minor, we hear all of these feelings and emotions and more. Yet it is his reverence and his devotion to God that binds his artistic testament together. And I really think that is a very profound thing to say and to hear. I'm very anxious. I have several of my family coming from South Carolina and Virginia for this concert because it's my final concert. And no one in my family is involved in music quite the way that I am. And I have been worrying a little bit about sitting through a work that's 2 hours long and all Bach, how they will respond to this concert. But having read these thoughts by Tim Smith, I stopped worrying so much about it because I think his music does speak to all mankind. And I think that's one of the reasons, besides just the fact that it's a great work of art, that it's considered one of the most significant works ever, not just by Bach, but of all composers.
I'm with Jim Turner, the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus and Orchestra. He'll lead the Bach B minor Mass on Sunday, May 14th at 3 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. And Jim, let's pick a selection from the B minor Mass to listen to.
Well, I think one of my favorite moments in the Mass, there are many, but one of the most dramatic moments in the Mass is moving from the movement, the Crucifixus, of course, the crucifixion, into Et Resurrexit, the resurrection. And it's that transition from the story of the crucifixion and leading to the resurrection that I think is one of the most exciting moments in choral music. So I think that might be fun to listen to.
Say it, 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 say it
Back with James Turner, the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, and we're talking about the preparation for May 14th. The Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus and Orchestra will perform Johann Sebastian Bach's B minor Mass. Could you tell us again the sections that we just heard?
Sure.
Where are we in the Mass?
We're in the middle of the Mass, and we're in the section of the Credo. And what we just listened to was the Crucifixus movement and that incredibly transition, leaving the Crucifixus and going into Et Resurrexi, of course, the resurrection, and that incredible contrast of musical mood that's being created. It also shows probably one of the best examples of some of the skills needed of the singers to sing long, sustained lines, as in the Crucifixus and some of the other movements like Etin Carnatus Est, and then the skill required to sing a totally different style of singing that involves singing a lot of notes very quickly, singing melismatic sections.
The meaning of those two sections was one meditating on Christ on the cross?
Correct.
And then
the story of the resurrection,
which is much more joyful sounding.
Absolutely. And so the singing and the instrumentation, of course, you hear the trumpets and timpani coming in with the resurrection. So the process of teaching singers that I've have done over the years, whether it's with the college singers or with the Bach Festival singers, is the skill to sing music that requires a singer, whether it's singing the music. A lot of people I probably know, For Unto Us a Child is Born. For Unto Us is Born. And that skill is not easily acquired by some people. Some people have an easier time singing fast-moving notes than compared to singing long operatic lines like in Puccini. For some people, that's more accessible to them vocally. But in the B minor, you have to do both. That's another challenge for the B minor. And so we start off by drilling very, very, very slowly and gradually speed up singing the notes. And we don't necessarily start off singing in Latin. We drill on whatever syllables are the easiest sounds for a singer to make. And that varies. Sometimes they drill on D-D-D-D-D. Sometimes they drill on B-B-B-B-B. Sometimes they drill on da-da-da-da-da. With the idea of putting a consonant, whether it's a D or an L, before every fast note, so they are more likely to sing every single note and not cheating on the singing of some of those fast-moving 16th notes. And then the real test is, once the tempo is set in a performance, is those 16th notes that the singers are doing have to line up with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everybody is playing the same 16th notes. So it's a real challenge to make sure that's all coming together. So we do it very slowly. And what I found over the years is giving singers permission to drill on whatever is the easiest thing for them to do, instead of my just dictating, saying, this is what you're going to drill on. I let them choose what they'd like to do as they're learning the music. And then we eventually come together and we have a consensus on what syllables we're going to drill. And then we finally approach the Latin. In the meantime, we study the Latin, and we're using the ecclesiastical or church Latin pronunciation guide. Some people choose the German pronunciation of Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And
Because Bach was German?
Because Bach was German.
Okay.
But I find, and most recordings tend to use the ecclesiastical Latin as opposed to the German Latin. It's just vocally easier to do. In ecclesiastical Latin, quia becomes cavia in German. So spitting out cavia becomes problematic compared to quia, which sort of rolls off the tongue pretty easily like Italian.
This is a really interesting inside look at all of the decisions, big and small, that have to be made in putting together a performance like this.
And I'm very lucky. Laurie Kanash, who is our Latin coach, does all the Latin coaching,
mm-hmm.
because unfortunately my French, my German, my Latin sometimes has a Southern accent to it. So I'm frequently mispronouncing some things, and Laurie has been a godsend in helping us stay on track.
What do you think constitutes good advice when you're teaching, when you're in teacher mode or choir director mode? What's the secret to saying just enough and then not overdoing it?
I think I'm still figuring that out as I'm about to retire. I would say what I said a few minutes ago. One of the things I've learned is to stop trying to control every single aspect of making music and letting people be responsible for whatever it is they need to do, and giving suggestions and truly experimenting sometimes to see what works and what doesn't work. But I would say learning to get out of the way of the singer and let them trust their own musical intuition. And I'm just there to guide. But ultimately, they've got to find their own way and navigate through some very difficult choral singing. So I would say that's what I'm still trying to learn to do.
Will you be available in an advisory capacity in our community in the future? I mean, will you still be involved with, like, the young person's competition?
Well, Jack and I are going to retire to Fremont, where he has a home there and he still has a church job. And I'm going to take a year off from doing anything for a little while. I've already been approached by some people about doing some vocal coaching and teaching back in Kalamazoo. And I said I would consider that after I've had a year to sort of get away from it for a while and then just take stock and see where I am. But I would hope I could still be involved in what's happening in Kalamazoo. As you know, it's a very special place to be, and we're all very lucky to be working in this world of Kalamazoo. So I hope that'll be in the future.
Well, my guest, Jim Turner, will conduct the Bach B Minor Mass on Sunday, May 14th at 3 p.m. in Chenery Auditorium. Was there anything else we should mention?
I would like to mention our four soloists, Caitlin Spencer, soprano, Phyllis Pancella, mezzo-soprano, Ian Greenlaw, baritone, and Thomas Cholufo, tenor. And also someone that I need to say a special thanks to is Carl Witt, who's been our rehearsal accompanist, of course, for this entire project. And so without Carl's help and his incredible musical skills, we couldn't have accomplished what we've done. So I want to say thank you, Carl, for all your help.
Jim, I'm not sure how to put it in words, but knowing you has, and knowing your contribution to this community, has just been one of the lights in the sky we have around here.
Well, it's very kind. Thank you.
Your contributions will stay with us for a really long time.
Thank you, Kara. Thank you.
What piece would you like to listen to take us out?
I think let's listen to this movement from the Gloria section. So the Gloria in excelsis chorus. Let's listen to that movement.